The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
While officials have yet to identify a precise motive for Wednesday's shooting, we are learning new details about the suspected killer. His family members say he recently became more politically active.
Charlie Kirk assassin Tyler Robinson lived with his transgender partner, according to sources.
Tyler Robinson was in a romantic relationship with someone transitioning from male to female.
And this is the same partner that reportedly came forward with messages from the suspect discussing the killing, including the rifle, engraved bullets, and a change of clothes.
Is trans is just another development. It adds an extra layer to what could have motivated this guy. But this guy, if he is the culprit, and authorities are very confident they have their man, he's told us why he's done this.
This whole thing, we were looking at this ideology and we knew it was Antifa and we knew what was on the bullets. We knew what the FBI had revealed and stuff. And I think a lot of people were just waiting to see if it had gone down that avenue as well. And if there was some kind of a trans connection, because we've seen so much violence from that kind of flank of the left. And then when he said that, I just was like, ding, ding, ding. It just kind of hit that nerve again.
Now, what is fascinating is that his slogan, "Prove me wrong," the only way this alleged killer could prove him wrong, the alleged killer in a relationship with a man transitioning to a woman, the only way he could prove him wrong was to shoot him. It shows you the depth of depravity of the ideology, which you mentioned. I'll be talking about it later in the show. The university left wing, these factories of toxic poison, they may well be at the root of the problem here as well, because a young kid who seemed a shy but perfectly nice kid goes off to college, and suddenly...
But hang on, we need to talk about another point.
We have a killer. This thing is so replete with ironies and tragedies, but he was discussing the issue of the trans killers and mass killers in America and the fact that they do seem to be fueled, however it works
that
out,
was,
by
that was
this
the question.
Ideology, by
that
this
trans ideology. The shooter waited until that moment when he was asked about the number, because there's been a number of trans-identified individuals who have shot up
including
Christian
that
schools.
Church in Minnesota 2 weeks ago, children. 3 weeks
two
ago,
weeks ago mass. Catholic, two small children killed, others shot. And he was asked about that, and he started to answer it, and that's when that shot fired.
Charlie Kirk's assassin had a trans boyfriend. He was called fascist by the shooter, according to the engravings on the bullets. Confirmed leftist by his friends and family. Confirmed leftist by top officials on the record, including the governor of the state. And he killed one of the most iconic conservative voices in American history. And yet leftists still claim that he's right-wing.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you have this horrific assassination. That's number one. Then you have the shocking reaction coming from the radical left. Even academics and prominent leaders in the Democrat Party. Either just coming right out and cheering it on or implying that it was Charlie Kirk's fault. And then now, and here again, we're just days away from this horrific act of murder that everyone saw on television. And now we're arguing over whether or not was he left-wing or maybe he was conservative. You know, his family was Mormon. He grew up in a traditional family. I think this might be a right-wing nationalist. There's people online that are actually saying this. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the first show of the week. So we're off and running, and we've got a lot to get to on today's program over the weekend. Quite a few details, as you heard there in the opening, quite a few details on this murderer that was captured, I guess, last Thursday night. And we got the announcement on the show Friday. But this from the Morning Brief. He spent, Tyler this is, the killer, he spent hours, thousands of hours in isolation, just absorbed into video games. And there's still some, you know, mystery to these last few years. Evidently, he was a very smart kid. He got a scholarship. He went off to college and he dropped out, I believe, before the first semester ended. So what happened to him? And, you know, the family does seem like it was a traditional, more conservative family. How did he become such a left-wing radical that was willing to pick up a rifle and murder, assassinate one of the most prominent conservative voices in America? What prompted him to do this? And then you see all the details of his strange life. I mean, there's so many layers of evil here. You could do a program on each of them separately. Not just the murder, not just the assassination, but just the perversion and the lives that so many young people today lead or live. He immersed himself in message boards, Discord chats, and Reddit subcultures and drew him to anti-fascist and leftist ideology. We wrote this morning, the online forums Tyler frequented appear to have introduced him to sexually deviant subcultures, memes, and discussions. And then you have all of the revelations about the fact that he was living with a man. He was in a homosexual relationship, and the man he's living with is transitioning to become a woman. And then there's people out there saying, well, I think he might be a right-wing nationalist. Listen to Megyn Kelly's take from her podcast, Clip 2.
Charlie Kirk's killer engraved the ammunition used to murder him with pro-transgender ideology, according to reporting in multiple outlets, to the surprise of literally no one. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I have more to report to you, okay? But I just have to pause here. Of course, that's the first thing I thought yesterday. I'm sure it ran through a lot of the minds of you watching this program as we did it live. Stephen was outspoken. Not Stephen. Charlie was outspoken on the trans issue and many issues. But there's one particular group that's been running around killing Americans in the name of transgender ideology lately, and it's transgender activists or individuals or those who proclaim that they are. Doesn't mean they're all murderous, but there's a particularly high percentage committing crimes these days. And it is responsible and important to say so, which is what Charlie was doing.
Yeah, and there's quite a few voices now on the conservative right that are saying it. But I guess just looking at it more deeply, how do you roll this back? You know, you talk about powerful, prominent people. There's a lot of powerful and prominent people pushing the transgender agenda, including those working in medicine, that are quite happy to help these young people mutilate their bodies. I think the one that was transitioning talked about how he'd get high and or get drunk just to sort of help absorb some of these chemicals he was putting into his body to make himself a woman. How do you roll this back? Especially when there's so many organizations and of course people, movements that are pushing this. My father wrote an article back in 2020. He said, today the transgressors have come to the full. That's Daniel 8 and verse 23. I mean, we're just full of sin. He said, the world is full of appalling evil. You see it everywhere, as in the days of Noah. We talked about this last week. Every thought is on evil continually. We've moved beyond accepting homosexuality. We've gone past embracing same-sex marriage. Today, transgenderism is mainstream. And, of course, people have known, people that will tell you the truth, The percentages of transgenders that just commit, you know, suicide, it's sky high compared to the rest in society. Now, of course, we're seeing that they're also murdering other people. And it's happening. It just happened a couple weeks ago in Minnesota. Those two children and many others shot up by a transgender, you know, about Nashville a while back. And now there's this. He's etched all these markings into the casings of his bullets. Pro-transgender. And he was sleeping with one. And then he murders Charlie Kirk. People embrace these changes as if it's a wonderful thing, my father said. It seems the deeper a person's perversion and sin, the more compassion they receive from this dying world. Well, you see it, as I say. It didn't take but 2 seconds for the talking heads to say or to imply, well, I think Charlie had it coming. I mean, he was outspoken. There was a clip I saw over the weekend. I didn't pull it, but she basically said Charlie was a white supremacist. And then others have now said his wife's even worse. Well, what are people thinking? No ounce of remorse, no compassion, no repentance. No, let's see. Let's have a discussion and draw the lessons that we need to take away from this. What can we learn from it? As it is, like I say, we're just a few days away. And now it's like, well, no, he was conservative because it's your fault. No, no, he was left wing because it's your fault. So now it's the blame game. Now it's pointing fingers. Here our country's on the brink of civil war. It's a civil war moment. And people are digging in their heels. And there's quite a few that just won't tell you the truth. And certainly, as I say, no repentance. There's so many different layers to this, you can't really get to all of them on one show. Listen again to Megyn Kelly from clip 3.
And they can't take us all out for speaking the truth about one of the most divisive, awful issues we've ever had infect our culture. It's still a sacred cow. You can't say anything about the transgender thing because they're so unstable, you might cause another one to do it. And because they're in the protected category that cannot be criticized, or you're a bigot.
She's right. I mean, she's right. You can't criticize them. But they're so unstable. And you dare criticize them and you're liable to set off another atrocity of some kind. How do you roll this back, as I say? That article, my father said, doesn't anyone care what God thinks about it? What does God think about transgenderism? What does he think about homosexuality or homosexual marriage? This is sickness of the greatest magnitude. This shows how serious is the breakdown of the family, which is a type of the kingdom of God. Satan has really deceived people. People hate that fiery law. I mean, even families that appear to be good on the surface, you just scratch a little bit beneath it, and what do you find in many cases? Mr. Hilliker addresses that in the trumpet brief this morning. I mean, leave aside assassination and murder and transgenderism. What about just immersing yourself into another world online? I mean, it used to be that you didn't even have that temptation because you didn't have the gadgets. I saw a little review on it was a movie from maybe 25 years ago, and it's kind of a comedy, and it's a small town, and nobody has anything to do in the town. So there's these quirky personalities and so on. It's got kind of a cult following now. But back then, I mean, you didn't have iPhones. You didn't have social media. You had a more lighthearted, even a lighthearted theme for a movie. Today, look at what Hollywood's producing. Look at what they're celebrating. There are a few clips online today. They must have had some award show last night. and all the Hollywood actors and all the things that they cheer on and that they celebrate. Yeah, you know, the normal talking points for the left-wingers, free Palestine, you know, cheer for the funny man that lost his job because he needs a voice. And we got to get Trump. So deeply divided. This other article that we wrote, this is from 2019, Transgenderism and the Pursuit of Happiness. It says here, but there's another side of this of the story. It has been ignored and covered up, but it's reality. Nearly half of people who identify as transgender experience anxiety disorders or depression. An estimated 41% have tried to kill themselves. Well, that was true of the Minnesota killer a couple weeks ago. But we've moved so far from that. Now we're on to Charlie Kirk and his assassin. But the guy a couple weeks ago had written that he was sick of being a transgender. He didn't like it. It wasn't what the doctors promised. So he went into that Catholic school and started shooting everybody up with bullets. We talked about this in the trumpet. I mean, tomorrow's news today. Becoming transgender has not helped these people be who they really are, and it certainly has not led to happiness. Does it make people happy living in sinful relationships? Well, it can appear to be fun on the surface, as I say. But look at what it's doing to our society. The notion that sex changes and societal transformation will solve the depression, misery, and heartache of this troubled group of people is a dangerous lie. It's a lie being promoted at tremendous cost. It's increasing the agitation and unhappiness of so many who identify as transgender. Society is paying the cost in public safety, parental authority, freedom of speech, and religious liberty. It says here, and beyond that, it's coming at the expense of truth itself. Truth is dying as well. You've got people online, as I say, arguing with the other side. No, no, he was a conservative, because only conservatives kill people. Meanwhile, it's just one transgender after another picking up their gun and going to work. Killing the opposition, murdering the opposition. Victor Davis Hanson picked up on a theme that's right there in Isaiah 1. America is currently sick. Well, you've heard that a time or two on this program. The sickness goes from head to toe. How are we going to be healed? Where's the physician that we need for spiritual healing? Like I say, you have this assassination in broad daylight on national television, or at least it was captured on video and then put on television. And you look at the world and you can't even agree on motives, on who's on this side or that side, on whether or not Charlie Kirk deserved it. I mean, the mentality. Satan and his demons have been cast down, and you see their fingerprints on everything. You see their thinking. VDH says here, no sooner was he killed, Charlie Kirk, than thousands of left-wing social media erupted in celebration. Among them, scores of teachers and professors. Their venom was eerily reminiscent of their earlier canonization of left-wing murderer Luigi Mangione. Recall, Mangione was the spoiled Nepo baby who lethally ambushed the United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson. Remember that? He just shot him from behind in cold blood. And there were people on the left that were cheering that. Yeah, you shot the establishment. You took him out. Good for you, Luigi. He's a murderer. Thereby, he became an icon to the left as a social justice warrior fighting the evil capitalist system, which had so enriched himself and his own family. Such utter moral bankruptcy was on display as well by the social media praise of Palestinian activist Elias Rodriguez after he brutally murdered a young Jewish couple. Remember that case in D.C.? I mean, so many of these cases seem like they happened years ago because we're just getting so used to it happening every week, every 2 weeks, that we're getting numb to it. It says Zarutska. Well, this speaks of the one in the Charlotte train case, the woman, the 23-year-old woman that was stabbed in the neck 5 times. And then slumped over into the floor of that cabin and died in her own blood, a pool of her own blood, as 4 or 5 onlookers just sat there, glued to their phones. In another world, in the world of social media, Mr. Hilliker, in that trumpet brief, he said, young people today are swimming in these kinds of influences. Around 85% of teens play video games. Over 40% play daily. Teens average 2 hours every weekday gaming. And a lot of these games, if you look into that, it's just appalling. The evil that's celebrated on the screen. 1 in 6 plays more than 6 hours a day. Can you imagine? As a parent, can you imagine just letting your child play video games for 6 hours? And sometimes with online competitors that you know nothing about? In some cases, predators? The culture within multiplayer gaming created and amplified by isolated youths whose real-world relationships and connection to reality can be tenuous, often marinates in extremely dark themes. I mean, they're just addicted to it. Today, I was talking about connections in life and teachings of Jesus Christ and how that God established his covenant with King David of old, the Davidic covenant. And he calls that throne established in David, the throne of David, when it's actually meant for Christ. It's actually Jesus Christ's throne. And yet God calls it the throne of David. Why? Well, as I told our young people, it's because we're connected to it. David was just an ordinary mortal man out on the sheepfold. And God set him apart for a special purpose. God made him a king. And if you look into the Gospels, you see that Jesus Christ is about to rule on the throne that God established in King David. And yet God calls it the throne of David because he wants us to see how we're connected to not just David, Jesus Christ. Revelation 17 says Jesus is King of kings, plural, and he's Lord of lords, plural. This is what God wants his family to be connected to, locked in. And we need to be spending hours immersed into that God family vision, that royal family vision. And you can see why Satan is so wrathful and why he's just surcharged the air with all of this filth, all of these violent themes, all of these sexual themes that are there promoting fornication and adultery. Certainly not a loving marriage. And then when you do have one, and they're rare, well, here comes an assassin that really wants to speak for the transgender community. And you got to take out the family man. You got to take out the conservative traditionalist because, well, he's a white supremacist. He's dangerous, what he's saying on college campuses. Is this God's world? The killer, DeCarlos Brown, the one on the Charlotte train, he can be heard on video mumbling twice, "I got that white girl." And so what do the commentators do? Van Jones, he rushes to the microphone And he says, how dare Charlie Kirk bring race into this story in Charlotte? There's no racial component to this murderer killing the white woman. Well, yes, there is. Came from his own mouth. So how do you convince these people that even when they hear it on video or they see it etched into the bullet casing, how do you convince them that I think this might be motivation here? I think we found a motive. His own family, in the case of the Kirk assassin, his own family says, yeah, he went radical to the left. Started cursing Charlie Kirk in just a family dinner a couple weeks ago. Said, you know what? He's coming to Utah. It says here, this is back to VDH. Sorry to bounce around so much. It says, why in the aftermath of the murder of Charlie Kirk are so many teachers, professors, and college graduate bureaucrats so eager to gloat over and cheer his death? Who taught them that? Well, that's a really good question that we don't hear enough. It's kind of like the Hamas ideology. I mean, we dig into that on this show. How did they learn to hate Jews? How did they learn to commit violent acts of terrorism? In this case, if you're a college professor or a college graduate and you're out there cheering on these transgender assassins, where'd they learn that? How do they learn that kind of lifestyle or that way of thinking? He says, are universities critical to America's prosperity and security now only in terms of the sciences, math, engineering, and medical schools? As for the humanities, they scarcely exist at the elite universities as we once knew them, either de facto or literally. Basically, what he's getting at is, I mean, you have some of the, you know, science, math, engineering, but there's nothing. There's nothing at the university about how to live, how to think. And as it happens, that's what moved and motivated Herbert Armstrong to raise up Ambassador College. And he proudly proclaimed, this is here to teach you students, how to live. Not merely how to earn a living. I mean, that'll come too. You want to bring God into your career and God will bless you. But above all, we have to know and learn how to live. You have to learn how to have a happy marriage. You have to learn how to raise up and teach your children. Look at Psalm 45 sometime and see what it says there about that royal family and how that royal father and that royal mother, they make princes and princesses. I mean, they are training them up, as the proverb says, and the way that they should go. That's a parent's obligation and responsibility. But we see precious little of that in today's families. Even in families that maybe on the surface look pretty good. Still, there's the tendency to just turn them over to the gadgets, turn them over to the devices, turn them over to social media, turn them over to hours and hours of gaming or social media sites, Reddit, Facebook, or whatever the popular ones are today, TikTok, I guess. And then you can go even deeper into the deepest of web internet and get to even worse filth. It's a cesspool, and a lot of our young people are jumping into it every day for hours and hours and hours. In the Globe and Mail, our news gatherer said that this is left-leaning. I think it's in Canada. But it does do a pretty good job of just, again, highlighting, like Victor Davis Hanson said, how sick we are. There's a sickness in America. A sickness has set in. It says here, the right-wing commentator, Charlie Kirk, has become a casualty of a version of America he believed could be resisted simply with words. You got to resist. You've got to reach out. You've got to try to convince them. And I think it was Don Trump Jr. that said, well, Charlie Kirk tried that, and now he's dead. Basically saying what a lot of other conservatives are saying right now. You can't coexist with them. You can only fight them. You can only resist them. We're headed to a frightening scenario, and it's prophesied. Mr. Kirk would talk to anyone, as he demonstrated. Well, further on it says, Mr. Kirk believed in an America that could tolerate even the most extreme forms of political speech, that the country's institutions were robust enough to withstand even the most inflammatory political dialogue. His faith, it seems, was misguided. He was assassinated. He was known for going into the lion's den. This was his thing. And now he's dead. It says the America that Mr. Kirk believed in, was a vision of a foregone time, akin on how an individual might look at a dying relative in a hospital bed and still see a gregarious aunt serving cocktails at a holiday party. This aunt has been sick before. Political assassinations are certainly not a new phenomenon in the U.S., but never before has she been so gravely ill. Here's more commentary about how sick America is. That's Isaiah 1. It's prophesied. I mean, this sickness, by the way, proves who we are in prophecy. Look at Isaiah 1 and see who it's addressed to. My people Israel. They don't know me. Even an ox knows his owner, but my people Israel, they're so far from me. And as it happens, I mean, you're going to see, well, you're already seeing it with the widow's words. I think it was Friday night or Saturday morning. She gave a sermon, basically, saying that Charlie was a martyr, that he was doing the work of Jesus Christ. He was doing God's work. And there's quite a resurgence of religion now. Not just because of what happened last Wednesday, but we've talked about the movement behind Jeroboam, you know, the King's Chapel there in Amos 7. Don't let a religious resurgence make you think that we're going to be able to roll back all of these sins, that we're going to come back strong from this kind of sickness that's prophesied in Isaiah 1. I mean, she said some nice words. And as I said, it's pretty amazing that these two, the Kirk family, that they were Sabbath keepers. They were very religious. And I imagine very, very sincere in their religion. But there's a lot of people in the world of religion today that may be sincere, but they're sincerely wrong. And Jesus exposed that. And really, Mystery of the Ages exposes that. This book that we talked about so much last week. It exposes so much of the thinking and the false doctrines that's there in the world of religion. Jonathan Turley had a piece, The Age of Rage. Here's another one, Sickness. Sickness everywhere that you look. Prove me wrong, he says. For years, that tagline of Charlie Kirk and his group, Turning Point USA, enraged many on the left. Why would it enrage them? And why are we living in the age of rage? What's most chilling about the assassination is that it was not in the slightest degree surprising. This follows two attempted assassinations of President Trump and the killing of a pair of Minnesota politicians. I heard of the assassination in Prague as I prepared to speak about the age of rage and the growing attacks on free speech. How about that? He's over in Europe. He's about to talk about the age of rage. And then he learns of the assassination. Charlie was brave and he was brash. He refused to yield to the threats while encouraging others to speak out on our campuses. He was particularly hated for holding a mirror to the face of higher education. That's right. I mean, he exposed higher education in many ways. Everything that was wrong with it. I mean, you look at the sins in society, and then you go to the university campus, and you see that it's even worse. The sickness is even worse. That's where they learn about, oh, someone got a set. Oh, it was that guy. Well, that's great. He deserved it. He's dangerous. And now the dangerous threat is gone. So let's celebrate it. There was one case where a student called out the other students in a classroom saying, you shouldn't be cheering for this. And what did the teacher do? The teacher comes in and kicks the student out that was appalled by the fact that there were so many young people cheering on Charlie Kirk's assassination. That is some kind of moral bankruptcy, some kind of sickness. President Trump last week, I didn't have time to get around to this clip, but he is at least coming out and exposing just how evil the radical left is, how dangerous they are. In this clip, he's talking about that Charlotte stabbing on the train, clip 4.
For far too long, Americans have been forced to put up with Democrat-run cities that set loose savage, bloodthirsty criminals to prey on innocent people. Really, very, very innocent people. In every place, they control radical left judges, politicians, and activists, and they've adopted a policy of catch and release for thugs and killers. In Charlotte, North Carolina, we saw the results of these policies when a 23-year-old woman who came here from Ukraine met her bloody end on a public train. She was slaughtered by a deranged monster who was roaming free after 14 prior arrests. We cannot allow a depraved criminal element of violent repeat offenders to continue spreading destruction and death throughout our country. We have to respond with force and strength. We have to be vicious just like they are. It's the only thing they understand. 24 of the top 25 most dangerous cities in America are run by Democrat mayors. 50 people were murdered in Chicago in recent weeks, with hundreds being shot. And it's time to stop this madness. The people of our country need to insist on protection, safety, law, and order. Chicago needs help. Other cities need help. We'll do what has to be done because we're going to make America safe again. And that includes our big cities. We're going to make those cities safe.
Now, as I've said so many times this past year, it's refreshing to hear from a leader who wants to uphold law and order. He wants to respond to vicious criminals with some vicious punishment. But you just step back and look at the bigger picture. I mean, we're headed for civil war. The seeds have been planted. And I mean, they're sprouting forth. They're beginning to grow. We're seeing it. And some of this has been in the works, I know, for years and years and years. You can't very well roll it back. There's a few things you can do to crack down, like you heard there. Crack down on criminals. But still, with so many radical ideologies and so many people immersed into another world that oftentimes is violent, we're seeing a level of demonic activity that we just haven't seen on this earth before. This is from an article, February 2023, Joel Hilliker. Transgenderism is swallowing our youth. He says, you must recognize the source of this trend. This anti-human self-destruction comes from Satan, the devil. What young people are doing to themselves, with the support and even encouragement of educators, school psychologists, physicians, and often even their parents, is so twisted, so devoid of logic and reason, so incomprehensibly unhinged, that it proves there is a God of this world who works in their minds. I mean, a lot of highly educated, very prominent people are encouraging young people to mutilate their bodies. It seems like every time I hear about a celebrity's child these days, it's a transgender. Why is it so pervasive in Hollywood, on the university campus? Why is it so encouraged by psychologists, by physicians? I mean, highly educated, highly skilled individuals. John 8, verse 44, summarizes the devil's character. He's the father of murder and lies. He's the originator of deviance and perversion. Satan's the author of all these things that we're seeing, these sicknesses, this disease, the spirit of murder, lies, and deception. It says further on, this anti-family, anti-God movement is turning young people into fanatics, shock troops, and crusaders of a false religion. How old was the assassin last week? I think 23. I forget how old the one in Minnesota was, the one that shot up the Nashville school. Another young, I think she was a young lady transitioning to be a boy. And again, these are all young people. These are the ones that the psychologists, the educators, the physicians, these are the ones they're encouraging. You don't hear these stories of a 65-year-old man thinking, you know what, I'd like to transition. No, they're all 15 or 20. And they've got full support from the university campus, from the medical field, from the psychologists, the educators. Yes, and in some cases, in far too many cases, the parents. How susceptible teenagers are to such forces, we wrote. They're growing, changing, trying to figure things out, hoping to feel included, seeking respect and status and inclusion. This is a perfect storm for drawing vulnerable young people into the nightmare of gender dysphoria, of trying to defy biology, of rejecting everything that could actually help them live a happy, healthy, productive life. What is it that makes us happy? Obeying God's laws. Where are the psychologists, the physicians, the educators, even the theologians that are encouraging young people to obey the laws of God, to follow the example of Jesus Christ, to live a life without sin, or at least to resist and fight against sin and those sinful impulses? God said from the very beginning, if you obey me, you'll be blessed. You'll be happy. All of these curses that we're seeing, they're coming upon us because of disobedience, because transgressors are coming to the full. As my father said in that other article we read, Daniel 8, verse 23, says, if there is one thing this movement likes to brand itself with, it is love, acceptance, inclusivity, embracing everyone, no matter what. Yet transsexuals often resent even homosexuals and radical feminists. If you don't think exactly as they do, they will attack you mercilessly. And that's what we're seeing. And now we're trying to figure out, okay, well, how do we solve this? How do we deal with this problem? It's one thing for Megyn Kelly to at least speak out about it. Good for her. But as you look around, do you see the solutions? Are solutions incoming? Well, the fact is, they are. But not the way the world thinks. Jesus Christ is about to return to this earth, and he's going to rule the nations with a rod of iron, it says. And who's going to be there ruling with him? Well, his bride. The bride of Christ that fully understands and knows and immerses herself into the throne of David and the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, God's family government. It's what this world needs. It's what this world is about to get. This world, though, it's not about love, as Mr. Hilliker wrote. It breeds violent hatred. It's not about inclusivity. It demands total conformity. You see, Charlie Kirk wouldn't conform. So we got to kill him. It's not about acceptance. It's about coercion and compliance. The hate, arrogance, intimidation, and violence among these people comes from the same source as their tragic and terrible sexual perversions. It is clear every day that this is a satanic movement. It is. It is. You're not going to get that on too many news sources. But it is the truth. It's a satanic movement. And the religion of this world is not going to be able to solve this problem. It's going to take pure religion. The pure religion of God, God himself, to finally fix this. And again, we can thank God that there is a plan in place. But God's going to take us, as I've been saying, quoting from the Epistles of Peter booklet, he's going to take us right to the point where we're about to destroy all of humanity. Because only then will we look to God. And when we look to the holy word of God, the holy Bible, and then finally submit to it. There was a piece, I meant to get to it last week, where that woman who was stabbed on the train in Charlotte, someone after that happened just wanted to produce an item on Wikipedia that just gave you the basic facts of the case. And this article, it's at the Free Press, is about how there were editors at Wikipedia that were aggressively trying to just scrub the record. This is where we are. It's like I said at the top. It's bad enough that you have this horrific assassination caught on tape. Then you've got the celebration, and now you've got the arguing over whose fault is it. And then you could add another wrinkle to the story. How much of the social media trail of these people gets scrubbed. We still know nothing about Thomas Crooks. And there's people working, by the way, actively scrubbing the record of Robinson. Now Moore has gotten out because it's so outrageous what has happened. And Charlie Kirk was so beloved in conservative circles. And of course it helps that you've got an administration now that is going to be more inclined to release information. But that said, I don't think, you know, for the FBI and the Utah governor to get together and, you know, pat each other on the back last week, there's plenty to criticize among law enforcement circles as well. We'll see if the full truth gets out there. But my point is that you have people working to conceal the truth. Just think for a moment, why would the editors at Wikipedia not want this story on their website? They fancy themselves as an online encyclopedia, right? And users anywhere can produce a post. But why would the editors want to scrub this story? Well, you know why. You know the answer to that. It says here, Irina Zarutska, boarded the blue line of the Charlotte, North Carolina light rail system on August 22 and began looking at her phone. She wore a hat and a T-shirt and so on. Within moments, she had caught the attention of a man wearing a red hoodie seated behind her. Well, it's giving the facts of the case. It says here, those are the facts, but a number of Wikipedia editors don't want you to know about the attack. Since the online encyclopedia's article, Killing of Irina Zarutska, was created on Saturday, this I think is the last Saturday, Wikipedia editors have fought to have it deleted. So, like I say, where did they learn this? Well, that's Victor Davis Hanson. Where did these teachers and these prominent educators, where did they learn to cheer on assassination and murder? Where did they learn that, well, this doesn't fit within our narrative, so let's just delete it from the record? It's truly Orwellian. It's building, isn't it? It's building toward a civil war. That's where we're headed. All the signs are there, and we've got to warn you about what's coming so that you're ready, so that you prepare yourself. Jesse Waters, well, I had a few clips last week just about the plague, really, of nationwide violence. Skip ahead to clip 8.
It's not just North Carolina. Every major city has DeCarlos Browns. In Baton Rouge, Anthony Jelks Jr., he had 6 arrests in 6 years, from firearm charges to domestic abuse. And he was let out of jail, put on probation, and then raped a 4-year-old. Gave her an STD. New York City, remember Michelle, the woman who was arrested over 97 times?
I went to Bloomingdale's. Okay. Bloomingdale's, and I stole, I professionally obscured some items consisting of polo and Ralph Lauren.
You got a pretty nice shirt on. Did you steal that shirt?
Did I obscure this shirt? I sure did obscure this shirt.
Will you steal even now that you're out on supervised
release? I have to leave your outfit.
Okay, so you're going to go steal it.
So I have to go work.
Work is stealing.
I don't call it stealing. I call it professional. I'm professional boosted.
So what are Democrats doing to stop it? Nothing. Tommy Mondami in New York wants to empty the prisons. The police can arrest these bad seeds all weekend, but it means nothing if they're out of jail by Monday.
There's another angle to this story, that there's a lot of people in powerful positions that want to release. A lot of judges in nice black robes that want to release these kinds of criminals. I'll just leave you with a few verses from Hosea 4, where God says to us in verse 1, hear the word of the Eternal. Let's get God's perspective here. Verse 2 says, by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery. Well, just backing up, it says this is happening because there's no truth or knowledge of God in the land. There's something dreadfully wrong with our education. We don't have enough time, but you can continue reading. Read the first 7 verses. God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Now, we're living in an information age. There's knowledge of everything, everywhere. And there's so much sin. The transgressors have come to the full. There's all kinds of knowledge, but there's no true knowledge from God, the truth. There's a lack of God's knowledge and truth. And that's why we are where we are. Jesus Christ is our master, our educator, which is why we have to seek knowledge and truth from Him. That's the foundation of true education. And that's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.